Shalom, welcome to Ask JTF, the program in which we attempt to answer questions from our great JTFers. I'm Chaim Ben Pesach from the Jewish Task Force. First of all, let me apologize for the fact that this program is late this week. It's coming out late. We're releasing the program about 24 hours later than our usual time every week. We try to meet a certain schedule every week, but there are events that occur both in Israel and here in the United States in terms of our fundraising on behalf of the heroic Hilltop Youth in Israel that sometimes force us to delay the program for a certain amount of time. But Baruch Hashem, at least we've been doing the program nonstop for many years now, every single week. And we hope to continue to be able to do that, Be'ezrat Hashem, God willing. This program is dedicated to a refuah shlema, complete recovery, for Sharon Mitman, Shlomo Ben Sara, Elsie Friedland, and Dorit Bat Sara, and to Ilui Neshamot, Elevating of the Souls, for Malka Bat Meir, Allegra Bat Shlomo, Daniel Nankin, Elizabeth Friedland, Erwin Friedland, Myron Friedland, Victor Chazdai, Pesach Zeh Ben Dov, Lunita Adler, Shifra Hoffman, Ruven Hoffman, Barry Hoffman, Harab Mir Kahana, Harab Binyamin Kahana, Tzipora Fegi Bat Liba, Yosef Ben Meir, Robert Mitman, Dana Shore, Helen Friedman, and Charles Zolat. Well, this is a week in which, of course, we're doing the program on Chol HaMoed, the intermediate days of the Chag HaMatzot, of the holiday of Pesach, the holiday of the Matzot, where we eat Matzot. And it's a very important time of the year, and an important time of the year with many, many lessons for us as Jews, and also lessons for the righteous Gentiles. But before we get to that, one of the things we've been doing is dealing with the urgent security situation in Israel, because there is a wave of Arab Islamic terrorism being directed against innocent Jews in Israel. And of course, the Israeli government, the Israeli police, the Israeli army are not protecting the Jews. They're not doing their job. In fact, they're actually on the side of the Arabs in most cases. And if any Jew attempts to defend themselves against the Arab terrorists, the Jew is the one that gets into trouble. So it's a very, very bad security situation. Arab terrorists in Israel have more rights than patriotic, God-fearing Jews. That's a fact. They do more to appease and help and fund, and the Israeli government is the biggest funder of Arab terrorism in Israel, because the Israeli government provides billions of shekels and billions of dollars in assistance. Billions of shekels, which translates eventually into billions of dollars. They're 3 shekels for a dollar. And that money is given to the Hamas terrorists in Gaza. Free electricity, free water, free housing, free food. All types of things for free that Israeli Jews never get for free. And the same thing for the PLO and Fatah terrorists in Ramallah. So we're trying to create a situation where the security situation will be better for the Hilltop Youth, at least, that they can protect their families, because they're on the front lines. If the Hilltop Youth were not there, Arab terrorist attacks would be far more widespread and far deadlier. And Israel's security situation would be unbearable, if not for the Hilltop Youth. The Hilltop Youth are the ones who are really protecting by staying on the front lines and blocking the Arabs from coming in to attack Jewish communities and to attack innocent Jews in Israel. They can't prevent all of it because we don't have enough people on the hilltops, because we don't get enough funding, but they are preventing a lot of it, and because they're on the front lines, Israel is much more secure. If those Arab terrorists and the Arab enemies of Israel were on the hilltops, looking down, controlling all the high points, all the strategic high points in Israel, that would put the Jews in Israel in a much more dangerous situation, in a much more precarious predicament. So the Hilltop Youth are protecting the whole people of Israel. Now, we want to provide for the Hilltop Youth. We need to get them more vehicles. For instance, we need to get them a new pickup truck, for instance. That's just one of the things that we need to get. And those things are expensive. I mean, those things are expensive. Relatively new, and when I say relatively new, it's not brand new. But a pickup truck that's 2 or 3 years old instead of one that's 15 or 20 years old. Because they need to have reliable vehicles in place to bring in reinforcements in the event of Arab terrorist attacks. And Arab terrorist attacks do take place against the Hilltop Youth, as they do against Israeli Jews in general. So we've got to get them. I'm just giving you an example. The pickup truck is just one example. And new roads and new connections to electric grids and other things that are essential to them. We need to get this for them. We need to supply them with this, and it's a security situation, and it's literally a matter of life and death. It's literally a matter of pikuach nefesh, because the Arab terrorists want to murder Jews, and the Hilltop Youth had their hands tied behind their backs by the Israeli authorities, who don't let them defend themselves. So we need to provide as much assistance to them as possible, so that they can protect themselves and their families, and in turn, they're protecting the whole Jewish people. God help us! God help us if they're not there, if they weren't there. God help us. The situation would be very, very bad for all the Jews in Israel. So we're working on that, and we're trying to also make improvements, of course, in the Hilltop communities, because there are other families that want to move in, but we need to make infrastructure and other improvements on some of the Hilltops in order to enable other families to move in. If we get enough funding, we'll be able to move more families in and increase the size of the Hilltops. That's our objective, because we have families that want to move in. But unfortunately, there are certain problems that prevent that right now. And those problems can only be resolved if we have the funding to create and provide for better infrastructure so that those families can move in, and so that it wouldn't be suicidal for them to move in, because we're not, God forbid, we're not asking even these heroic Jews, we're not asking them to commit suicide, God forbid. So if we can provide the infrastructure, we can provide a better security situation with more funding, more families will move in, and the Hilltop communities will be strengthened, and the security of the Jews of all of Israel will be strengthened, and the campaign to stop a Palestinian state will be strengthened, because the Arabs, they are building at such a frenetic pace. They are building all over with this. They're spending hundreds of millions of dollars to build all over. And so we urgently, urgently need to help the Hilltop youth and to strengthen their communities before it's too late. So that's what we're working on. And before we give you the information on how you can help the Hilltop youth, before we do that, I want to speak about Chag HaPesach, Chag HaMatzot, the Pesach holiday, the Passover holiday. Pesach is Passover in Hebrew. You know, it's a holiday in which we learn that in the plague of darkness, there were 10 plagues, Eser Makot Mitzrayim, there were the 10 plagues that hit Egypt. And in the plague where there was Hoshech, where there was darkness, there was a plague of darkness, Hashem took action against the 80% of the Hebrews in Egypt, in ancient Egypt, that didn't want to leave. Moshe Rabbeinu challenges Pharaoh. There are all these plagues. You see the incredible power of God humbling the kingdom of Egypt. And still 80% of the Jews wanted to live in Brooklyn and Los Angeles and Paris and in London. And some Jews were even crazy enough to want to live in Ukraine and Poland, these other godforsaken hellholes, anywhere but Israel. You know, you'll always have Jews that do this. Okay? Or that say we have to have and have all types of excuses why they have to live there. And then they make excuses for why they have to live there. Make it sound like it's something noble they're doing by not moving to the land of Israel. There's nothing noble about it. The only noble thing is to live in Eretz Yisrael. It is not noble to live outside, to live in the Galut. HaGalut HaArura, the cursed Galut, which is a punishment. We're not allowed to live outside of Israel. Especially when we have a Jewish state and Jewish sovereignty. And so 80% of the Jews in Egypt, at that time they were called Ivrim, they were called Hebrews, 80% of the Jews in Israel, or rather in Egypt, didn't want to leave. Even with Moshe Rabbeinu, even with Moses and the great miracles and the incredible plagues and all the other things that we saw, they still didn't, 80% still didn't want to leave. Only 20% wanted to leave. The 80% disappeared. Now we're not sure, there's a machloket. Machloket means a disagreement with Chazal and with the great commentators as to exactly what happened to the 80%. They disappeared from the Jewish people. There's no connection to them and the Jewish people anymore. That's clear. They disappeared. Whether it was through assimilation, intermarriage, and all the other terrible things that plague 80% of American Jews today, whether it was that or whether they were just killed in the plague of darkness. We don't know. There's some rabbis who hold that they were killed, at that time, that Hashem punished them because this was just because the price of not going to Israel when the time comes is either physical or spiritual death or both. Okay, that's what we saw during the Nazi Holocaust. The Jews that didn't want to leave Europe, we saw what happened to them. The Jews that did leave Europe and went to the land of Israel, the minority of Jews, they survived. The Jews in America and other countries now that don't want to go to Israel, the vast majority of them are facing a spiritual Holocaust, spiritual death, with intermarriage and assimilation. There's no future for the Jews outside of Israel. No future for the Jews outside of Israel. And people who say, well, you can make Brooklyn holy, and you can make Muncie holy, and you can, it doesn't have to be the Holy Land in Israel. They are nuts. They are nuts. You have the same mentality with that 80% of the Jews in Egypt who said that we can make Egypt holy. So this is not something new. You don't think there were people in Egypt who said, well, we have a yeshiva, and we learn in the yeshiva in Egypt, and they have big shuls, and they have the rabbinim. You don't think you had people in Egypt with that mentality and all those excuses? Of course you did. Korach ve'adato. Korach and 250 great Torah scholars and leaders in the community. The Aguda and the Shas of those days. And people who called themselves great Torah scholars. Yeshiva University types. They rebelled, even they were among the 20%, and even they rebelled when they were in the desert. They wanted to go back to Egypt. And many of the Jews that eventually left Egypt, when they were in the desert, wandering in the desert, they wanted to go back to Egypt. They didn't learn their lesson. There's some Jews that just never get it. It doesn't matter what happens, they never get it. Ukrainians murder hundreds of thousands of Jews during the Holocaust. The Jews don't get the message. They think we're going to be friends now with the Ukrainians. Black Jew haters make it clear that they've declared war on the Jewish people in the United States. You have Jews who think that we have a civil rights alliance with blacks, with Louis Farrakhan and Jesse Jackson and Barack Hussein Osama and all the other black anti-Semites. And this is just over 100,000 Jews now. Over 100,000 Jews now live in Germany. After they murdered 6 million Jews during the Holocaust in Nazi Germany. There's some Jews just never get it. One thing we learn from history is that many Jews never learn. They just never learn. We got to face that. We got to face it. Oh, you shouldn't say that. It's not nice. It's not this. It's not nice. Be nice. Don't be negative. Don't be da-da-da-da-da. Have a smiley face. Baloney. Okay? We need truth. We need truth, and we need to face reality and stop living in a fantasy world. The good Jews in our generation are in Israel. Those are the good Jews. And especially the ones on the hilltops. Those are the good Jews. Now, the Jews in America that are here, at the very least, it's their obligation to support and do everything they can to help the good Jews. And the best Jews, of course, are the hilltop heroes. That's our obligation, at the very least, to do that if you're going to be in America, which we shouldn't be to begin with. And so 80% of the Jews in Egypt didn't want to leave, and they were wiped out, either through assimilation and intermarriage, or they were killed. Many rabbis believe that they were actually that God killed them in the plague. And you know, there's another interesting aspect of the Pesach story that I think we should mention. Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses, who is the greatest human being that ever lived. I mean, he's the greatest Jew that ever lived, the greatest human being that ever lived. I mean, the ultimate giant of all generations was Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses. Of course, we have other great giants in Jewish history, like David HaMelech, like King David, and Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, Avotenu, our fathers. They were all great. Shmuel HaNavi, Samuel the prophet, another great Nevi'im. But, you know, one of the interesting things is, what are the Jewish heroes in the Torah and in the Tanakh in general? The Tanakh is the Jewish Bible. What are the Jewish heroes? What are they? How do they look? What is their character? Are they a 90-year-old Reb, a 90-year-old person sitting in a yeshiva his whole life and telling people to live in the United States and telling them we can give away parts of Eretz Yisrael, is that what they were like? No. Moshe Rabbeinu was a hero. He was a fighter. Yes, he was a Torah giant, and yes, he was a great scholar. But he was also a hero and a fighter who destroyed, physically destroyed, the enemies of the Jewish people and stood up to the enemies of the Jewish people. He wasn't sitting around saying, "Oi, we have to study now in the yeshiva, and we have to, oi, don't go to Eretz Yisrael, it's dangerous, oi, oi, oi." Or even, we have some in Israel itself who live in Israel itself. We have rabbis who are idolized, who live in Israel itself, say it's okay to give away Jewish land, and it's okay as long as you get money from the government, bribes from the government to pay for your institutions in Israel. And so the Aguda and the Ashkenazi Haredim stayed. They stayed in the government of Arik Sharon that expelled and threw 10,000 Jews out of their homes in Gush Katif and northern Samaria and Tzfon HaShomron. 40 flourishing Jewish communities were destroyed in the Gush Katif expulsion, in that criminal, massive pogrom that took place. And as a result of that, thousands and thousands of rockets are fired into Israel. Just this week, again, they're firing rockets into Israel. The Arab terrorists, which we were assured of would never happen once we get, oh, we're going to have peace if we give up Gaza and we let the Hamas terrorists take over Gush Katif. Yeah, some peace. Every Israeli surrender, every Israeli concession, every Israeli withdrawal always leads to more war and more bloodshed and more tragedy for the Jewish people. Always. And so the heroes of the Bible and the heroes of the story of Pesach, Moshe ve'Aharon, Moses and Aaron, they were all warriors. They were all brave, heroic figures that stood up to Paro, that stood up to the greatest, most powerful dictator in the world. They weren't people who said, give me a bissel geld for the yeshiva le, and we forget about, don't worry, but okay, don't worry, it's alright. No, that was not Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu was a hero. King David, that the Mashiach will come from, he was a warrior. He started out his career by doing what? Aside from tending sheep, what did he do? Killing bears and lions that wanted to attack his sheep? Because he was like one of the, like the hilltop youth today, taking care of sheep and grazing the land of Israel. And then, when he was just a young guy, pretty much still a kid, he killed Goliath, and won this great victory for the Jewish people. That was David HaMelech, who wrote this, who wrote Tehillim, the Psalms, and gave us, and because his great kingdom and all the great things that he did and the preparation he made for the building of Beit HaMikdash, of the Holy Temple, because of him, his lineage will go on forever. The Mashiach ben David, the Mashiach will come from him. Mashiach being the Messiah will come from him. And Avraham Avinu, Abraham, our father, the first Jew, the world's first Jew, he was a warrior. He defeated four kingdoms when his nephew Lot was taken prisoner. Lot and his family were taken prisoner, and to liberate them and free them, he defeated four. He went to war against four kingdoms against all odds. Was a mighty warrior, Avraham Avinu. And the Mashiach himself will not be some wizard, the Wizard of Oz, performing miracles, sitting around saying, oh, the Rebbe knows this, and this one knows that, and this one does this. That's not going to be the Mashiach. Rabbi Akiva, who was probably the greatest, the most foremost Torah sage in terms of giving us Torah Shebe'al Peh, in terms of giving us the oral Torah. Rabbi Akiva was number one on the list of those who gave us Talmud and Torah Shebe'al Peh and the oral law which we need in order to be able to understand the written law in the Torah. He told us that Bar Kokhba, was going to be the Mashiach, should have or could have been the Mashiach in his generation. And the great rabbis of that day said it was going to be Bar Kokhba. Bar Kokhba was not some person sitting around figuring out how much money to get for his political party, or sitting around in some set. And by the way, studying in yeshiva is very important. And people should study and people should learn. That's very important. But fighting for the Jewish people on the front lines in the battle for survival is not any less important, and maybe even more important. And so, Bar Kokhba, he was a warrior. And he could have been and was going to be the Mashiach if he hadn't committed certain sins that created a downfall that were disastrous. He did some terrible things that made it impossible. But if he had been righteous and had really had done what he should have done, he would have been the Mashiach. And he was a warrior and a general and a leader and a political leader and a military leader. And that was who was going to be Mashiach ben David. Not someone sitting around in Muncie all day. Not someone sitting around not even being loyal to the land of Israel. No. Not someone teaching his students to be wimps. Bar Kokhba was a hero and a great military leader, and nearly defeated the entire Roman Empire. That is who was going to be the Mashiach if he hadn't sinned and done some bad things that made it impossible, that ruled him out from becoming Mashiach, and we paid a terrible price for that. But he would have been Mashiach, and so that's the model that Harambam tells us. You want to know a model of how the Mashiach is supposed to look like? Harambam says this. Harambam is Maimonides. You want to see that? Look at what Rabbi Akiva said about Bar Kokhba. That's the model. That's the role model. Not some wizard sitting around doing miracles and saying, oh, he knows, he can tell you the future. He knows. No. Not somebody sitting around who never fought for the Jewish people, who never left the four walls of the yeshiva world and doesn't even know what's going on outside of them. Harav Ovadia Yosef, whom the Sephardic Jews in Israel worship, and my family are Sephardic Jews, and many of them worship Harav Ovadia Yosef, supported the Oslo Accords and had Shas sitting there with Rabin and Peres when they met with Arafat. And they say, he's Posekador. He's the one who decides what happens in our generation. He's the genius of our generation that determines Torah law and halachic law. Really? Posekador, and he supported Oslo? How is it that a simple Jew like me, that even a simple Jew like me knew that it's impossible that Oslo would succeed, that it's impossible to trust the Arab Hitler, Yasser Arafat, Yimashmo Bezichro, who murdered thousands of innocent Jewish men, women, and children with a brutality that we haven't seen since the days of the Holocaust? How is it that I knew that you don't make deals with Amalek, with these murdering beasts in the PLO and other organizations that are committed to the same goal as the Nazis, and that are Nazis? How is it that I understood this, and Harav Ovadia Yosef, who's the great Gaon, he didn't know what a simple Jew like me? Every simple Jew who sells falafel in Israel knew you don't deal with Arafat. Every Jewish cab driver could tell you don't deal with Arafat. But Harav Ovadia Yosef thought that this is peace, and listen to what Aryeh Deri told him. Aryeh Deri, the evil leader of Shas. By the way, Aryeh Deri, who accepted Arafat in Israel and accepted tens of thousands of terrorists in Israel, he and his and when he was interior minister and his other interior ministers wouldn't let Chaim ben Pesach make Aliyah, but Arafat was okay. Arafat and the PLO terrorists, armed, murderous PLO terrorists, hands dripping with the blood of thousands of innocent Jews, they were welcomed into Israel and given arms by Israel. And given land, Jewish land. But Chaim ben Pesach is not allowed to go to Israel, not allowed to make Aliyah. And these are people who claim to be the pillars of Torah Judaism. My rabbi, Morenu v'Rabbeinu Harav Meir David Kahana Zecher Tzaddik v'Kadosh Livracha Hashem Yikom Damo. He was in the tradition of the great, real Jewish heroes of the Torah and the Tanakh, Avraham Avinu, David HaMelech, Moshe Rabbeinu, Bar Kokhba, Shmuel, the prophet, who anointed two kings, who anointed Shaul, the first king of Israel, the first official king of Israel, and anointed David HaMelech. He anointed two kings, Shmuel HaNavi, Samuel the prophet. And he, you would think, well, he was a prophet, so he had to learn. Of course, he was a great Torah scholar. You have to be a genius to be a prophet. You have to be a great Torah scholar with tremendous Torah knowledge. And he certainly was a genius. But he was also a warrior. When he saw the king of Amalek, Shaul didn't kill the king of Amalek. He himself took out his sword and cut the king of Amalek, that Nazi beast who wanted to exterminate the whole Jewish people. He himself took out his sword and cut the king of Amalek to pieces with his sword. The prophet, Shmuel Hanavi. Is this the example we're being given in our generation of what our Torah leaders are supposed to be like? Is this? It's a look what we've descended to. We need to return to the days. To return to the days when we learn Torah and observe mitzvot and live in the land of Israel and fight for the Jewish people with courage and nobility and understand that with the Tanakh, with the Bible in one hand and a sword in the other hand, we are here to fight and represent Kiddush Hashem, sanctifying of God's name. The Hilltop Youth represent that. They are heroes, and they study Torah. And by the way, JTF pays for Torah study on the Hilltops. JTF finances that as well. They study Torah, and they observe mitzvot, and they're devout Jews and true Jews in every sense of the most God-fearing Jews in every sense of the word, and they're warriors fighting for the Jewish people. Is that more like King David or and Moshe Rabbeinu and Avraham and the other heroes of the Bible and the Tanakh? Aren't they more like that than the examples given by other groups that tell us that we're not supposed, oh, you shouldn't, oh, it's dangerous, oh, we got to give away the land, oh, yo, yo, otherwise they'll get mad at us. You want them to be mad at us, oh, yo, yo. There are two ways that we can help the heroic Hilltop Youth. Because the least we can do, those of you that are still in the Galut, I hope someday you'll move to the land of Israel. I hope you'll learn Hebrew, and I hope you'll move to the land of Israel, and I hope you want to live in the land of Israel. But at the very least, while you're here, you should be helping the Jewish heroes in the land of Israel, and JTF gives you a chance to do that. You have no idea how important someday the help that you give to JTF will be for you. You have no idea how much that's going to help you for your eternal destiny. I have no doubt. I have no doubt. Even though I'm a simple Jew and I'm not Anilo Navive, Anilo Ben Navi, I'm not a prophet or son of a prophet, but I can tell you, even as a simple Jew, I have no doubt that God will greatly reward those who love the land of Israel and love the Jewish people and who defend the politically incorrect Jewish heroes, because it's the politically incorrect are the ones who change history. They're the ones who make a difference. The ones who toe the line of the establishment never make a difference that's positive for the Jewish people. They do not. In fact, they harm the Jewish people by their subservience to evil rulers and evil leaders that are leading us astray. Here's how you can help the Hilltop Youth and help the Jewish people. If you want to contribute online, you go to our Hebrew main page, hayamin.org, and you click on the donate button in English. The Hebrew main page, the page is in Hebrew, but there's a donate button in English on top. You go to the donate button, click on the donate button, and in several minutes, very conveniently and easily, you can donate online and help the Hilltop Youth. There's a second way. If you don't want to do it online, you prefer to do it with checks and money orders through the regular mail, that's just as good, makes no difference. You can send checks and money orders made out to JTF, and you send it to JTF PO Box 650327, Fresh Meadows, New York 11365, JTF P.O. Box 650327, Fresh Meadows, New York, 11365. Again, the check and money order made out to JTF, and that will certainly help. Okay, let's go to our questions now from our great JTFers, if I can get to it. I hope I can get to it. I hope I know what I'm doing here. Bezrat Hashem, God willing. Okay, let me make sure, let me refresh the page and make sure that we're up to date here. Yes, we're up to date here, and we're good. And here we go. The first question is from the great Hidvatsky Noahide. Hidvatsky Noahide writes, and I quote, one, can you define the terms bailment, bailer, and bailee in the context of the Noahide prohibition of theft? Two, can you give a Torah example using them? Well, that's a very tough question, because it's very legalistic and halachic, and I'm just not, you know, I think this is just a little bit too complicated for a simple Jew like me to answer the question, but I'll try my best to tell you the little that I do know. First of all, bailment. Bailment, I think, basically, I'm assuming bailment is basically bail. That's setting bail, I assume. And what it means, bail is not just what we think of today. We think of bail today in terms of putting up bail to release somebody while they're awaiting trial, someone who's facing criminal charges and awaiting trial. But bail or bailment can also mean handing over property or something of value as a guarantee. And in Hebrew, we call that arvut. And there is a halachic concept called arvut, where you can hand over something to guarantee, for instance, that you're going to do what you promised to do, or that you're going to come where you promised to come, or carry out a function that you were supposed to carry out. You sometimes will, when someone wants a guarantee from you, they sometimes will take something of value from you, and that's called arvut. Now, bailer is the person giving the thing of value, or the property, or the bail. He's the one giving it. In other words, he's handing it over in order to make a guarantee. And the bailee is the one who receives the guarantee, who receives the property or thing of value. So those are the three terms as far as I can see. And again, these are English terms. They're not, it's an English word. These are not Hebrew terms. So I'm trying to define it within the context of the little that I do know about the, and it is very limited, the little that I do know about this subject. As far as in the context of the Noahide prohibition of theft, I'm not sure exactly what you mean or exactly how that would fit into the Noahide prohibition of theft. I honestly don't know exactly what you're referring to, Hidovatsky, so I'm unable to answer that. I can just give you, as I did, the definitions as far as I know. And as far as a Torah example of using them, I think it's just providing guarantees or security to somebody that either you're going to perform a particular function. For instance, there are examples that are given in the Talmud of someone promising to guard over something, or someone guard over property, or do other things where they're promising to perform a certain function, and the owner of the property or whatever that's to be guarded wants some sort of guarantee, and so he receives what's called the arvut, what's called a guarantee in terms of property or in terms of something of value. That's the only thing I know about it. If I'm missing something, Hidovatsky, you know, I apologize, but that's my limited knowledge in this subject. Thank you, Hidovatsky. And now we go to Rams Sheva Sheva Efes, who's going to ask his question in Hebrew, and I'm going to read it in Hebrew, and then I'm going to quickly give him an answer in Hebrew, and I'll try to translate as quickly as possible. It'll just take 2 minutes. I know most of our great JTFers in the English forum don't speak Hebrew, but we're going to try to move. We'll just take a couple of minutes. Okay, here's what Ram writes. Shalom Chaim Hayakar Mashlomcha. Hayim Shamata Acharei שלוש שנים תפסו את המחבל הערבי ימח שמו וזכרו שרצח את הזוג יהודה ותמר כדורי, השם ייקום דמם. מה דעתך על זה שהמשטרה nisu lasot avel laben shelahem ולכלה שלהם שטענו שהם רצחו את הזוג בושה וחרפה עשו להם עוול אבל עצוב לי שהמחבל ימח שמו וזכרו לא ימות הוא חי בבית מלון בכלא חייבים אותך חיים היקר בארץ ישראל וגם מתרגש עוד שבוע לראיון אצלך עם אלכס האם זה אפשרי שאני אקשר אותך לעידן בן חמו הבעל של בת דודו שלי שתכירו אתמול הייתי בחומש היה לי כיף חיים אני עשיתי תמונות שם אתה רואה אני במעשים ולא רק בדיבורים אני שוקל אחרי שהכיר אישה אהיה נשוי לגור ביהודה ושומרון מה דעתך שאחרי פסח נארגן שיחת זום נוספת אם אתה בעד מועדים ומועדים לשמחה ושהקדוש ברוך הוא יברך אותך באהבת ישראל רם מאיר אברהם. Okay, and Ram is writing about various incidents that took place in the land of Israel, including a terrorist that was captured three years after he murdered a couple, and that the son of the couple and his wife, a great injustice was done to him. כמובן, Ram, שכמו שאתה יודע, אני בעד עונש מוות לכל המחבלים הערבים הנאצים ימח שמם וזכרם תכף ומיד מגיע להם עונש מוות וכל המצב הזה זה חילול השם היום ונורא ללא ספק and what I just said to him was that of course we favor the death penalty for all the Arab terrorists and the situation there is a terrible one and Ram is also asking me about an interview that I'm going to be doing with Alex who runs an internet site who's going to be interviewing me this will be a Hebrew interview and Alex does some pretty serious interviews with many hundreds of thousands of views and he's going to be interviewing me next Tuesday next Wednesday Bezrat Hashem he'll be interviewing me next Wednesday Kendram ani sameach sheyesh li reayon im Alex ani mekave sheze yatzliach lehavi lanu yoter tomchim לנוער הגבעות. And I just said to him that I hope that this will bring more supporters for the Hilltop Youth, because obviously the interviews I do are to try to bring support for the Hilltop Youth. That's my goal. אני מודה לך, רם, על כל מה שאתה עושה. And I thank Ram for all that he does for us. And now we're going to Yemach Shmoda Islam, another good friend of ours who writes, while in prison, did you encounter any inmate sentenced for extortion? Unquote. Of course. It's called the RICO statute. In federal law, the racketeering statute, and of course I was in prison with many mafia leaders, John Gotti, and many other mafia leaders. I was with them at the Metropolitan Correctional Center, the MCC in Manhattan, which is the federal prison, the federal jail in Manhattan and Lower Manhattan. And many of them were charged with extortion. I was also charged under the RICO statute because they claimed I was extorting the Soviet Union. I mean, it was ridiculous. It was hilarious. But anyway, they claimed I was extorting the Soviet Union. So they also charged me with numerous RICO counts in my indictment, claiming that... and in fact, I was sentenced under the RICO statute to my sentence. Thank you, Yemach Shmoda Islam. And now we go to our good friend Joe Gutfeld, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim. What do you think about the recent mass shooting in the New York City subway? Should the shooter be executed? Thanks. Joe, of course he should be executed. He tried to commit mass murder. You don't let somebody like that live. He wanted to commit mass murder against innocent people. Just go and slaughter innocent people in the subway. You let a monster like this live? What type of signal are you sending? It's horrible. We live in a horrible system. In a horrible society that allows these monsters to live. Of course he should be executed. Thank you, Joe. And now we go to our good friend Chicago Jew, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim and Chag Sameach, what is your opinion of the movie The Ten Commandments, unquote. Well, fortunately, it was done by a Gentile. Cecil DeMille, what was his name? You know, I do this off the cuff, Chicago Jew, and other people who are listening, who correct me many times, and I'm glad you correct me if I make mistakes, because I do make mistakes on the program sometimes, because I, especially when I'm speaking about Hollywood and actors and actresses and the things like that, because I, you know, I'm not an expert on Hollywood or actors or actresses or movies, or far from it. So I make mistakes, and if I do, I should be corrected. But you know, I do it off the cuff, so I don't, you know, the Ten Commandments. I thought. Was very tastefully and done very well. I thought it was very exciting and a very good movie for its time. And I think his name was Cecil B. DeMille, the Gentile who was responsible for putting that film together. And he did it very respectfully. The only thing I didn't like in the film was that they showed the finger of God writing the Ten Commandments on the Luchot, on the tablets. That I thought, God doesn't have fingers and God doesn't have any physical... God has no physical characteristics whatsoever. Because physical characteristics, if you say God can become a man, God forbid, or can be anything else, any physical characteristic is a limitation. Anything physical is a limitation. God is absolutely, completely unlimited in every respect. In every respect, he's unlimited, and his oneness is absolute. Because if he's absolutely perfect and has absolute power, his oneness and his unity is absolute. And so showing him finger writing, that was the only thing I didn't like about it. But otherwise, I thought it was respectfully done. And you know, I wish we had movies like that today instead of the garbage we have now. Thank you, Chicago Jew. And we now go to Roi. Roi writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, comment on the following, and then there's a list of various people here. Zamir Kohen. Zamir Kohen is a Haredi rabbi who was part of the Shas movement, and so he represents a movement, he's part of the movement and party that give a Shas, which supported Arafat and Oslo. So he represents the worst of people claiming to speak for Torah Judaism. The worst. The people that brought us all the tragedies and all the disasters with the support, with the gushpanka, with the support and the approval of so-called Torah authorities to give up Jewish land, surrender Jewish land, bring in Arab terrorists, appease the Arab murderers. All these policies that Shas has supported. Shas is corrupt and evil and traitorous. And Zamir Kohen supports that movement and supports that party. So obviously, I have no respect for him at all. And Gilad Alper is an atheist who is basically concerned about the economy because he wants to make a lot of money. He's right that Israel should have a free market economy, which is what he stands for. He believes Israel should have a free market economy. That he's right about. But he's an opportunist who takes immoral positions on all the other issues, and he was part of Moshe Feiglin's party, of the Zehut party, and then stabbed Feiglin in the back and formed his own party. He formed his own party where you get minimal number of votes when he runs for Knesset, has no chance of passing the threshold and getting into the Knesset. He happens to be right on one issue, but on all the other issues, aside from the economy and aside from the free market, on the other issues, he's wrong. He doesn't believe in Jewish values, and he doesn't believe in Judaism, and he doesn't believe in Torah, and he doesn't understand why the land of Israel must be the land of the Jewish people. He has no understanding whatsoever of the times we live in, of why we're back in Eretz Yisrael. We're not in Eretz Yisrael to turn Israel into some prosperous market for high-tech people. I'm not saying that it's bad to have high-tech in Israel. It's good to have high-tech in Israel. It's good for there to be a free market. It's good for there to be competition. It's good. Those things are good. But on every other issue involving values and morality and decency, he's wrong on those issues because he's an atheist. And because he happens to be against the religious Jewish position. And Roy now writes, and I quote, Ben Carson. Ben Carson is a black opportunist who has no real positions on the issues, but he's decided he's going to make money and get cabinet positions, and which he did, and advance himself. He ran for president as a so-called black conservative, which he's not. He's not a real conservative. He's not a real Republican. He's a big phony. And the disgusting phony backstabbing campaign he waged against Ted Cruz was just grotesque. He's a complete phony fraud. Roy now writes about Dr. Mordechai Kedar. Dr. Mordechai Kedar, unfortunately, is a very dangerous person because he comes across as very knowledgeable and people, even on the right, respect him. But he wants to surrender Judea and Samaria. He wants to create what he calls emirates, Palestinian emirates. Of course, there is no Palestine. There are no Palestinians. But he doesn't want the Jews to have control over Eretz Yisrael. He does not. He has a plan that he put out, which would create, which would give the Arabs control over the big cities and main areas of Judea and Samaria, and he would call these areas emirates. Just nuts, completely nuts. I mean, I don't know what's with him, but you know, to him it's a completely foreign idea. The idea that the Jews actually should control their own homeland, and that to him is unthinkable. And that the Jews should get their enemies out of that homeland, which is what we stand for. But that's his plan. His plan would be crazy. God forbid that we would implement his plan. And next is Oskar Schindler, who was, of course, the German, the Sudeten German industrialist who is credited with saving 1,200 Jews during the Holocaust. I don't know enough about him to say whether he really was a righteous Gentile, because you know he was a member of the Nazi Party. And he did support, he publicly at least claimed to support the Nazis in their goal, but he also had 1,200 Jews working in his factory who were not killed because they worked in his factory. He kept them in his factory. Was he doing it for monetary reasons, but he was still loyal to Germany, and even when it was Nazi Germany? I don't know the answer to that. I just don't know enough to say, so I can't really pass a value judgment on that. And one more, Yoav Eliassi, Hatzel. Hatzel means the shadow, and he's a rapper in Israel. Now, anyone who knows anything about this program knows that if there's one thing I hate, it's rap. I hate that. This is the lowest monkey music. Just gorilla music from the jungle. And it's not even music. It's not music. It's just ranting. It's filthy, dirty mouth pigs who were swinging from trees in the jungles of Africa, and now they're supposedly rapping. They'd be rapping with the filthiest, dirtiest, and you know, these words become acceptable now in the English language. They use all the filthy, dirty language, and it becomes acceptable. And the things they rap about, raping women, selling drugs, being members of gangs, hating whites and Jews, all of this becomes acceptable. You know, because they rap about it, and all the stupid, brain-dead young people who listen to this crap, they go along with this. So I hate so-called rap. I think it sounds horrible, and it is horrible, and it's not creative, and it's not. It's garbage. It's low-life garbage. And he introduces this into Israel, and is an Israeli rapper in Hebrew yet. Disgusting. But it's not just that. It's not just that. Not only does he promote and support black Jew haters and the culture of black Jew haters, I'm talking about his name is The Shadow, this rapper, The Cell. Hatzel, meaning The Shadow. Not only does he support black Jew haters, he married a homosexual so-called couple in Israel 8 years ago. He had a ceremony, and he was the one who officiated the so-called marriage between two sodomites, between two homosexuals in Israel. This is the type of so-called morals that this rapper is bringing to young Jewish minds in Israel, dumb young Jews who are dumb enough to listen to him. This is what he's bringing to them, that you can be a sodomite homosexual and get married. And in other words, destruction of all Jewish moral values. And of course he joined the Likud. Of course, big right winger, he's in the Likud. That's a right. That party has done more to destroy Eretz Yisrael than any other party in Israel's history. 90% of the retreats from the land of Israel took place under Likud governments. 90% of the expulsion of Jews in Israel since the 1967 Six-Day War took place under Likud governments. And so, of course, he's a member of the Likud. I can't stand him, frankly. Can't stand him. And he had the nerve. I could go on and on. I'm not going to, he had the nerve, of course, to condemn Yigal Amir and cause problems. Poor Yigal Amir is in prison all these years. Yigal Amir is accused of killing Yitzhak Rabin. He's in prison all these years. But meanwhile, Arab terrorists who murder dozens of Jewish women and children, they get freed very quickly in these so-called prisoner exchanges. But Yigal Amir and Jews who are in prison, they stay in prison for eternity. They never have any chance of getting out. And this piece of garbage got Yigal Amir into trouble with a phone call. I think he's a really rotten person, a bad person. Thank you, Roy. And now we go to Kahana Will Always Be Right, who says, and I quote, please comment on, and then there's a list of five people. And we start with Morton Downey Jr., who had a show on television. I hate it. The only reason I ever watched him was because he had Rabbi Kahana on as a guest one time, and that was good that he had Rabbi Kahana on, although he was, confrontational with Rabbi Kahana. I couldn't stand his show with the smoking and just the violence and the threats and the dirtiness on his show. I couldn't stand it. I thought that he degraded American culture and acted like a lowlife. Next is Phil Donahue. Phil Donahue also had a show on television. Phil Donahue is a vicious left-wing Jew hater, of a despicable Jew hater who was very anti-Israel on his program, and who was always sympathetic with the enemies of Israel and the enemies of the Jewish people. Yimach Shmo V'Zichro to Phil Donahue. Howard Stern, another filthy person. The Howard Stern with all the dirty jokes and all the filth he has Howard Stern is what we call a leitzan in Judaism. Leitzan is considered to be the worst thing you can be. The plishtim, ha-plishtim, the Philistines were leitzanim. Leitzan is someone who's always joking. Nothing is ever serious. Everything is always a comedy. Everything's always a joke. Auschwitz and the murder of the Jews in the Holocaust, that's a joke. And Howard Stern does jokes, does Holocaust jokes, and does Auschwitz jokes, just scum, the lowest of the low. Just a Jew with no self-respect, a disgrace to the Jewish people, and the dirtiest, most foul-mouthed pig you could ever meet. On the air, and dirty and foul-mouthed even on the air. Larry King, another self-hating Jew. He was married 7 or 8 times. And how did he get married? He's just an ugly person. So ugly. How did he get married all these times? He would tell these women when they wanted to come on the show, you want to be a guest on my show, you have to be willing to marry me. And they would marry him just so that they could be a guest on his show. He'd make a deal with them that they get married so he could be a guest, so they could be a guest on his show. And then he'd have sex with them and then he would divorce them. That was Larry King. Of course, shiksas, all, none of them were, I don't think any of his wives were Jewish. And he was the ultimate self-hating Jew. He supported Arafat. He supported the PLO terrorists. He supported all the enemies of the Jewish people. Just vermin. Pure vermin. Meghan Merkel, or Markle, whatever her name is. This is the black, or half-black, Obama, Barack Hussein Osama is also half-black, but they all identify as black. Anyway, she's the half-black or black woman who married into the so-called British royalty, anti-Semitic British royalty, and she's always using her race, to attack white people and vilify white people and say that everybody's a racist. The only people that aren't racist are the black racists. The black racists who hate with venom anyone who's not black, they're not racists. And if you say, well, black people, of course they hate, they were slaves. The Jews didn't make them slaves, and they blamed the Jews for slavery, just like Hitler and the Nazis would scapegoat the Jews for things they never did. The black Nazis do the same thing. They blame the Jews for slavery. The Jews were responsible for slavery in the South? The Jews were the slave owners and the ones who were doing the slave trade? Are you kidding me? Anyway, she defends that whole mentality, that whole evil agenda. So, she's scum. Thank you, Kahana will always be right. And we now go to our good friend Binyamin Yisrael, who writes about Pharaoh and so on and so forth. Okay, you can read his comment if you want. And then he asks two questions. One, discuss the following Egyptian leaders, the Pharaoh that ordered the Jewish babies to be thrown in the Nile River. Well, of course, this was a very evil person who was terrified because he saw the Jews reproducing and becoming bigger and bigger, and he thought they would be a threat to Egypt. And so he decided to murder all the Jewish baby boys. He wanted to murder them. He didn't want to murder the Jewish baby girls, by the way, because he wanted the Egyptians to have children with the baby boys, I mean with the baby girls, and because he realized the Jews were a great, brilliant people, and he wanted that to be the future of Egypt. He wanted to take them and make them part of Egypt's decadent, degenerate culture. But he wanted the Jewish baby boys to be murdered. The Pharaoh of the Exodus. Well, that Pharaoh, which came about 80 years later, because Moshe Rabbeinu was 80 years old. Moshe Rabbeinu was a baby when the decree was issued to throw the babies into the Nile River. And then 80 years later, he came back to liberate the Jews from the land of Egypt. So it was about an 80-year period between these two events. And the Pharaoh of the Exodus, he didn't believe in God, and he had a giant book of all the gods, name of all the gods. And when Moshe Rabbeinu, when Moses came to him and said to him, told him that the God of Israel wants to, let my people go, he said, "Your God." He said, "Let me look him up." And he looked him up in the book and couldn't find him. He didn't find him in the book. He said, He's not even in the book. He's not even. He's not even listed in the who's who. This is the God you have, God of slaves. And so he had to be taught a lesson, which was a lesson that was intended also for the Jews to learn. The Jews were also supposed to be learning this lesson about what their God really is. But in the end, he was taught quite a lesson by the God of Israel in the 10 plagues and of course with the parting of the Red Sea. And Ptolemy II Philadelphus, who ordered the Bible translated into Greek. Well, the translation of the Bible into Greek was a disaster, was a tragedy, because of course it led to misinterpretations and distortions. So there were many aspects of it that were tragic, and that's why the rabbis at the time didn't want this to take place. They didn't want the Bible to be translated into Greek at the time when it took place. And the second question of Binyamin is, discuss Muhammad Ali and the Jews. He ruled the land of Israel in the 1830s while the land of Israel was controlled by Egypt during the Egyptian revolt against the Ottoman Empire. Yeah, and if I'm not mistaken, he also conquered other places like Syria and other places. He conquered quite a bit of land in his rebellion against the Ottomans. Ottomans, of course, being originating in Turkey. Like all the Muslim rulers of Israel, he did not want a Jewish presence there. And so the Jews, they had a rough time with the Muslim ruler. When all the Muslim rulers, whether they were Turkish or Egyptian or any other Muslim rulers over the land of Israel, they had a very rough time. They had a rough time with the Christian rulers also. Christians murdered them. And the Mongols and the Jews really suffered in the land of Israel. For 1900 years, the Jews suffered until they finally came back and redeemed the land in 1948. Thank you, Binyamin. And we now go to our friend Chaim Azulai Efeshesh, who also has a question in Hebrew. And we're going to do it quickly and translate. Shalom Chaim Hayakar, Chag Sameach, Umoadim Lesimcha, Mashlomcha, Birtzoni. לשאול מספר שאלות. אוקיי, מה דעתך על השוטר הערבי אמיר חורי או חורי, שקיפח ומסר את נפשו ואת חייו נגד המחבלים המרצחים הנאצים ברחובות בני ברק, ובכך הציל תושבים רבים ממוות. האם אתה מעריך את מעשיו במסגרת תפקידו? And he's writing about an Arab policeman who got into a gun battle with Arab terrorists who attacked the Jews in the streets of Bnei Brak, and he was killed doing so. But he also killed the Arab terrorist, or at least he fought against the Arab terrorists, and the situation could have been worse. No, he was just doing his job. אני לא קונה את זה. אני לא קונה את כל הניסיון להפוך שוטרים ערבים לגיבורים. אני לא קונה. קודם כל, בשבילי אפילו שוטרים יהודים הם לא גיבורים. אני חושב שהמשטרה בארץ זה מוסד מושחת ואנטישמי שפועל נגד יהודים, שמקדם את האויב הערבי שלנו. ואני לא מעריך את היהודים במשטרה. על אחת כמה וכמה לא הערבים ששונאים את היהודים. האם הערבי הזה עשה משהו טוב? זה היה התפקיד שלו. הוא הגיע והוא ראה שהם יורים, והוא היה צריך. הוא היה צריך לראות כדי למנוע את האסון הזה. וזה היה התפקיד שלו. אני לא קונה את זה שעכשיו אנחנו צריכים להעריך את השוטרים הערבים. בכלל לא. אני לא קונה את כל הסיפור הזה. And I just said that I don't buy the story. I think the Arab policemen, I think there's an attempt to make them into heroes. I don't even consider the Jewish policemen in Israel to be heroes. The police there do terrible things against their fellow Jews. It's a corrupt police force that does horrible, anti-Semitic police force that does terrible things against Jews and defends our enemies. And no, I don't respect and admire. I don't respect and admire Jewish police, let alone Arab police. בהקשר לשאלתי הקודמת, האם לטעמך הדברים של איימן עודה נגד אנשי כוחות הביטחון הערבים שצריכים לזרוק ולהיפטר מנשקיהם נכונים, או שהוא הגזים לדעתך? צריך לדעת להכיר תודה כלפי כלל השוטרים ואנשי כוחות הביטחון ללא קשר לדתם ומוצאם. He's talking now about Ayman Odeh, who's an Arab leader from the Knesset, who said that the policemen should not be, the Arabs should not be policemen and shouldn't be in the border guard and so on and so forth. And do you agree with him, or should we be respecting all the police regardless of race? And כמובן ש Ayman Odeh, who שונא ישראל, who אנטישמי, who הוא ערבי רע, הוא תומך בהשמדתנו, והוא ערבי רע, ימח שמו וזכרו, שם רשעים ירקב. אבל בנושא הזה אני מבין אותו. ואני, הלוואי שלא היו ערבים במשטרה, ולא היו ערבים במשמר הגבול. הלוואי, כי זה לא טוב לנו, וזה לא משהו חיובי בארץ ישראל. אני חושב שזה מסוכן מאוד שיש לנו מצב כזה, כי אני לא סומך עליהם. And I said that I think it's bad. I do not trust the Arabs on the police force or in the border guard, and I think it's a dangerous situation that we have them, and I think it's unfortunate. I wish that they would follow his advice and leave the police. And now and I'm saying his advice, this Arab leader, Arab Jew hating leader that said they should leave the police. And now Chaim Azulai writes, and I quote, שאלה לא פוליטית אבל עדיין מעניינת, האם אתה ביום יום שלך עוסק בדברים גם לא פוליטיים, או שכל החיים שלך עוסקים רק בפוליטיקה? תודה רבה על הכל, ושנדע רק בשורות טובות וחיוביות. אמן. Now he says he asked me a personal question. If all my life I only deal with political things, do I have anything else that I do in my life other than that? Chaim, ani lo choshev shema sheni ose zo politika. Politika bishvili ze bechirot, miflagot, kol hadvarim hakatnuniim ale. Ani lo choshev sheani mitasek bepolitika. Ani sonne politika. Ani mitasek be'eretz Yisrael, ve'am Yisrael. והמאבק שלנו בדור הזה לא רק לשרוד אלא להביא את הגאולה השלמה והסופית במהרה בימינו אמן כן יהי רצון זה מה שאני מנסה לעשות בחיים שלי וזה כן כל החיים שלי אפילו נכון שאני אוכל ונכון שאני ישן ונכון שאני עושה דברים אחרים אבל מה שאני עושה, הכל מכוון כדי לתת לי את היכולת, כדי לתת לי את ההזדמנות לתרום למאבק שלנו, למען ארץ ישראל ועם ישראל, כי זה מה שבאמת חשוב בחיים. אני יודע שאנשים אומרים, אוי, זה קנאי מדי, מה זה, אין לך חיים, זה מה שיש לך. אני מאמין שאלה חיים אמיתיים. אני מודה לך חיים אזולאי, and I just answered him by saying, of course I eat and sleep and do everything else. And I take a shower every day, and I do everything else that everybody else does, and I take care of my personal affairs so that I could live, so that I could have a roof over my head and I can live. I do all those things. But I do all of that with the intention of enabling me to contribute in some way to the struggle for the land of Israel and for the survival and redemption of the Jewish people in the world. Because I think that's real living, and I think that's our real purpose in life. I think living an idealistic life is true living in this world. That's the life that we should be living. Imagine if everyone in the world were idealistic and fought for the good causes, and imagine what a world this would be like. Can you imagine? Bezrat Hashem, God willing, someday. And I thank Chaim Azulai for his questions, and I thank everybody again for another week of Ask JTF. I enjoyed doing the program. For JTF, until next week, this is Chaim Ben Pesach. Shalom.